Our reading this morning is from A Tender Unitarian Christmas, Yankees Touching Harps of Gold, by the Reverend Aaron B. Wolfe. Much hay is made today among Christians regarding the commercialization of Christmas, but little is said about the Unitarianization of this most wonderful time of the year. Maybe because we do not notice or mind. Yet the season of Christmas, especially Christmas Day, the Feast of the Nativity, is supposed to be a celebration of the central fact of the Christian faith. Take away the tinsel, the after Thanksgiving sales, the Grinch, and the folks dressed up like Eskimos, and what do you have left? Good old-fashioned American Unitarian Christmas with God bless you, everyone, and every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings, and angels bending near the earth to touch their harps of gold. Many, perhaps, do not realize that It Came Upon a Midnight Clear was penned by a Unitarian minister, Edmund Sears. This Christmas carol is sung in many Catholic, Lutheran, and Presbyterian churches, despite the fact that it does not even mention the myth of the birth of the Christ child. Its message is frighteningly Unitarian. But with the woes of sin and strife, the world has suffered long. Beneath the angel's strain have rolled 2,000 years of wrong. And man at war with man hears not the love song which they bring. Oh, hush the noise, ye men of strife, and hear the angels sing. The Christian era has been a mere 2,000 years of wrong? What then is the purpose of Christmas? Is it our opportunity to hear the angels sing? What do they sing? Peace on the earth, goodwill to men, from heaven's all-gracious King. When President Trump announced just after Christmas that he was fighting the war on Christmas by bringing Christmas back and greeting his followers with Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays, he was joining in a cultural debate that began 12 years ago. 12 years ago, Bill Riley, on his Fox News show, began to rant about Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas, which he took to be a direct assault on Christianity in the United States, which he feels is the moral underpinning of our country. So, after he started raging about it, the conservative Christian right began to take up the moral outrage. In fact, the American Family Association decided to start keeping a naughty and nice list. And this was not a list about the things we consider to be moral issues, like the things Bill Riley was fired for earlier this year. But their naughty and nice list had to do with American companies and whether they said Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. You got on the nice list if your advertising includes the word Christmas and Christmas themes and your employees wished customers Merry Christmas. You got on the naughty list if, in fact, you said Happy Holidays and embraced the full holiday season. And there's a 2017 list right on their website that you can go see. You should shop there. So the American Families Association is declaring, as is President Trump, that the conservative Christians are winning the war on Christmas because now, in fact, more companies do say Merry Christmas than they did 10 years ago. What the AFA and Donald Trump and Bill Riley and all those who are so deeply concerned about Happy Holidays don't seem to know is that there already was a war on Christmas in the United States. According to Stephen Nessenbaum, who wrote the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Battle for Christmas, during the early 19th century, the most contentious political battles of the early 19th century were slavery and Christmas. And at that point, it wasn't the conservative religious community that won, but it was the liberal religious community that won, and specifically Unitarians won. This might really surprise you. It really did me when I first heard this story. Unitarian Universalists aren't really people who fight a war about Christmas. For most of us, Merry Christmas is great, so is Happy Holidays and Happy Solstice and Happy Hanukkah. Anything that's sort of joyful and festive works. And if we were going to make a naughty or nice list around Christmas, it would be, you know, companies who aren't environmentally conscious or have terrible labor practices. But once upon a time, Unitarians thought fighting for the soul of Christmas was the fight to fight. And so they did. It was Unitarians who brought together Santa Claus, Christmas trees, gift giving around the tree, focus on charity, and peace and goodwill toward all, to create the Christmas that the majority of Americans celebrate today. And while the story of the baby Jesus was not left out, what was central to the holiday was not the idea of God being born in human form, who would eventually be sacrificed for sin, as it was for the conservative Christians, but instead Christmas came to embody Unitarian values and theology. Aaron Wolf, the minister who wrote our reading this morning, finds this reality about Christmas so disturbing that he published an article entitled A Tender Unitarian Christmas a number of years ago as a cry to conservative American Christians to stop celebrating the Unitarian version of Christmas and get back to the real Christmas, which focuses on the miracle of God becoming human in Jesus. So how did the Unitarians take over Christmas? Let me tell you that story. It was long ago, but in this very country, that the Puritans banned Christmas. At that time in England, Christmas was nothing like the Christmas we celebrate. Instead, it was a wild public party, much like the 4th of July or Mardi Gras. People drank. They got crazy. They shut off guns and fireworks, and they stormed houses of the wealthy in a practice called misrule. The poor would take over mansion houses, and the ladies and lords of the houses would be required by tradition to wait on the poor and serve them. This partying way of celebrating the winter has an old, old history. When the Roman rulers were trying to convince their people to be Christian and not pagan, they announced that Christ's birthday would be celebrated in December, the time when Romans celebrated Saturn, with 2 weeks of wild partying. And their 2 weeks of wild partying ended on December 25th with the birth of Mithra, who was born in a cave at that time. And that was kind of the spiritual holiday, but they had 2 weeks of wild partying and then the spiritual holiday. So they just tried to, you know, put Jesus right in there. So later, as Christianity moved north, the celebration of Christ's birth got mixed up with other winter traditions, like Celtic Yule. And these holidays also had an emphasis on party. And the reason for that, and this is so interesting, is that it was the first time that you could harvest animals and keep them cold so you could, you know, not just eat them the same day. So there was, and they had just finished the harvest, and they had, the brewing of the beer and the wine had just come, you know, those things had just fermented enough that you could drink them. So right after, you know, the final harvest, there was a lot of plenty and a lot of alcohol. So that is one reason it's the party month. And so we still really actually celebrate the parties, partly Christmas tradition in that way. So the Puritans were very bright. They are ancestors, after all. And they understood the pagan roots of Christmas too well. So they said, the Bible never mentions celebrating Christ's birth. And they said, if God wanted us to celebrate Jesus' birthday, the Bible would have given some indication when his birthday was, which it doesn't. So Puritan leaders insisted that everyone ignore the holiday altogether. And people worked. It was just a normal day. Then in 1621, some of the colonists tried to take the day off and celebrate Christmas, and they were ordered back to work by the governor of Massachusetts, and they were fined. 30 years later, the General Court of Massachusetts declared the celebration of Christmas a criminal offense. And the Puritans really did win that war on Christmas for a very long time. For 150 years in New England, it was illegal to celebrate Christmas. But by the 1800s, things had changed. New immigrants were coming from Europe, and in the southern United States, it started this wild partying practice of Christmas. And the Irish immigrants had started coming into New England, and they also had this wild partying version of the Christmas holidays, which the Puritans were really, really not for. So Christmas was this fabulous day for the alcohol industry and for the bars. I think it still is, but so in the early early 1800s, Puritans no longer had the moral and political authority that they had in New England to hold off Christmas. They were no longer this unified group, but had divided into the conservative and liberal factions. And the liberal Puritans, who were on the verge of becoming Unitarians, began to call for the public observance of Christmas. So conservative and liberal Puritans divided on many, many theological issues, but one of the fundamental ones with the nature of people and the nature of conversion. So conservatives believed that people were naturally bad. It came out of the Puritans for Calvinists. And it was based on the doctrine of original sin, that we are all born with sin and we are all naturally bad. And they believed, but the liberals believed that people were naturally good because God had created us. So we were created in the image of God and therefore good. Conservatives believed that true Christian conversion was an emotional, spirit-filled moment where God just came into you and you were converted. Liberals, however, believed that conversion happened through education, through thinking, and the development of character based on following the teachings of Jesus. Christmas, the Unitarians believed, could be a holiday to promote the values of generosity and charity and social good, and will be a wonderful time to build all of these values, particularly in children. Unitarians at that time were obsessed with how to raise generous and good children with good characters who were kind. Tradition had said before that that the evil that was born into a child must be beaten out of them. But the Unitarians didn't believe it. Still, they wondered, how do you raise a child who is kind and generous and good and would follow the teachings of Jesus? We still ask many of these questions today, but at the time, it was completely new ground. There wasn't a lot of books about it yet. And Unitarian parents were genuinely anxious. They wanted to raise good children. And celebrating Christmas, many felt, had the potential to help with this development of character. So in the 1800s, the Unitarians were the trendsetters of their time. I mean, all of us know their names, Emerson and Thoreau and Louisa May Alcott, and then many others. And they were very well educated, often wealthy, and they had access and control of the media of the time. They held their very first Christmas service in 1789, when it was still illegal, and they continued to celebrate Christmas. And they began to write about Christmas, bringing their values and theology to the forefront of the conversation about should we and how do we celebrate Christmas. An important moment in this transformation of Christmas from rowdy partying to a thoughtful time of gift-giving and kindness was the publishing of the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas in 1823 by Clement Moore. Before that, there was no unified tradition of a Christmas visitor bringing gifts to everyone. There were certain cultures that celebrated gift-giving. The Dutch's children received gifts from St. Nicholas, and the English children received gifts from Father Christmas. It was Moore who created the Santa, pulled by flying reindeer, who gives gifts to all children that we still love today. He wrote, "He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread." Later, it was Thomas Nast, a Unitarian, who illustrated 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. He placed Santa at the North Pole as a message that Santa existed for all of the children of the world. He made Santa even more plump than he already was and gave him a red suit. Together, Moore and Nash fully transformed St. Nicholas, a bishop known for acts of charity, into Santa Claus. Aaron Wolfe wrote in A Tender Unitarian Christmas, writes bitterly of this change. What was once a real person who performed acts of charity as a response to the redemptive work of Christ became an unreal, mythical figure who inspires us to be nice to one another. Well, Moore himself was an Episcopalian. He did indeed, with Nast's help, transform St. Nicholas from a Catholic bishop into a Unitarian. There, Santa Claus believed in the worth and dignity of every child, and that all deserved some kindness and pleasure. There, Santa Claus reminded people to be kind and generous. Unitarians also brought the Christmas tree to the United States. The Christmas tree had become a tradition in Germany in the 1700s. And during the Christmas of 1832, Charles Follen, who was a German immigrant, he was the first German professor at Harvard, and once he came here, became a Unitarian minister. He brought a small fir tree into his home in Boston and covered it with small dolls and gilded eggshells and candles to delight his two-year-old son and to remind his family of the traditions he remembered from his childhood. And he invited several colleagues, Unitarians of course, over to see the tree. And one of the guests later wrote, "It looked really beautiful. The room seemed ablaze. The ornaments were so well hung on that no accident happened, except one doll pedigo caught fire." The children poured in, but in a moment, every voice was hushed. Their faces were upturned to the blaze, all eyes opened wide, all lips parted, all lips arrested. While there had been some stories of Christmas trees further south, the tradition really did not take off until two of Follen's Unitarian guests wrote about the experience. Soon, middle-class Americans were celebrating Christmas by putting up Christmas trees. Unitarians also brought us family gift giving and the tradition of children giving gifts to their parents. Again, the tradition came from Germany. Samuel Coleridge, who was the Unitarian poet famous for the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, traveled to Germany one winter. And there he saw a ritual around a fir tree where not only did the children receive gifts from their parents, but they also gave the parents gifts. He wrote, "There were 8 or 9 children, and the eldest daughter and mother wept aloud for joy and tenderness. And the tears ran down the face of the father as he clasped his children so tight to his breast. It seemed as if he did it to stifle the sob that was rising within him. I was very much affected." Coleridge loved how this tradition taught children about generosity and unselfishness, and his story about it was published in the Christian Register, which was the forerunner to the UU World. This was one of the great answers to the Unitarian question at the time: how do we teach generosity to our children? The gift exchange among parents and children became part of the Christmas tradition, not only in Unitarian homes, but in homes across the country. Unitarians also brought us, it was a Unitarian minister who wrote Jingle Bells, and it was another Unitarian who first started decorating the outside of houses with lights. And they also brought us Christmas charity. They believed our responsibility as religious people was to follow the teachings of Christ, and part of that was to care for the poor, or the children, as we heard about this morning. The publishing of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, who was a Unitarian, brought charity to the forefront of Christmas. A Christmas Carol is steeped in Unitarian theology of acting as Jesus would and treating the least among us with care. Says the nephew of Scrooge in that story, "I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come around, is a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of people bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it." And we believe that. Not just Unitarians, but most Americans believe that. At Christmas, we make sure, like Santa in 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, that all children receive gifts and that food banks are full of food, and that at least for a few weeks, people everywhere are cared for and become, and because for us, that's what Christmas means, generosity and caring for others. I love all the Christmas traditions brought to us by our Unitarian ancestors. I love how they remind us to be kind and generous and good and giving to the people we know, and to the people we do not know. This is, for me, is the spirit of Christmas. But just important to our understanding of Christmas is the Unitarian of that time's version of Christmas hope. In the conservative tradition, the great hope of Christmas is that God became human in the form of a baby and would eventually die for human sin. For liberals, the great hope of Christmas comes straight from the angels at Jesus' birth. Peace on earth to all goodwill. People, those Unitarians believed, and I think we still believe, could live in peace and could be good to one another. Earlier we sang It Came Upon a Midnight Clear by the Reverend Sears. That Christmas carol, Wolf acerbically notes, doesn't even mention Jesus. No, it doesn't, because it's about Unitarian hope. Sears wrote that carol in 1849 at the end of the American-Mexican War. He was also an abolitionist. He knew the incredible evil that people are capable of inflicting on each other. Still, even in that moment in time, Sears found in himself reason to hope. And he shared this hope in a hymn that is sung in Christian churches everywhere, expressing an essential meaning of Christmas for us today, that peace and human decency are truly possible. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, the beloved Unitarian poet like Sears, was deeply upset by human pain and by war and the cruelty we could show to one another. The Civil War grieved him greatly. And then just a few months after the first shots were fired, just before Christmas, his wife had cut a locket from their young daughter's hair and was putting it in hot wax to preserve it. And her dress caught on fire. And she was burned horribly. And she died the next day. Longfellow was devastated. Christmas, that was once such a joyous time for that family, was simply unbearable to him. The first Christmas after his wife's death, Longfellow wrote, "How inexpressibly sad are all holidays." A year later, he wrote in his journal, "A Merry Christmas, say the children, but that is no more for me." Then his young son, Charles, ran away from home to join the Union Army. The next year, right before Christmas, his son Charles was hurt very badly, and he lingered for a long time between life and death. And on that Christmas, Longfellow did not write in his journal at all. The next year was 1864, and Longfellow was sitting in his study on Christmas morning when he heard that the church bells begin to ring. Christmas was too much to bear. He took up his pen to write a poem to share his inexpressible pain and despair in that moment. And as he began to write, the Christmas bells continued to ring. And in that time, his Unitarian faith was reborn. His Unitarian faith in the ultimate goodness of life. He finished his poem with the affirmation that wrong shall fail and right prevail, and that as the world revolved from day to day, a voice, a chime, a chant sublime of peace on earth to all goodwill. The Longfellow poem was set to music and has become an important Christmas carol. It is a deep expression of the Unitarian faith that peace on earth and goodwill to all are possibilities. It is an expression of hope that the majority of Americans remember each year, as they remember the hope in a newborn baby, or place coins in the Salvation Army Christmas Santas outside of stores, or express such gratitude for the light of the sun and for family. And it is particularly an expression of hope that we need now. As each day, it seems, our values as Unitarian Universalists are undermined by new laws and regulations, or no regulations and policies that undermine what we fundamentally stand for and what we truly believe will increase suffering for people and for the world. We need Unitarian hope. When there is pain and despair, Longfellow reminds us, light and hope do return. It is a truth, and it is a truth that I am so thankful for our Unitarian ancestors bringing to the celebration of Christmas. It is a truth worth celebrating, whether we say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or Happy Hanukkah or Happy Solstice. Merry Christmas to all of you. Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, and blessings.
We have a few minutes for questions or comments or anything you would like to say. I'll try and get around you if you raise your hand.
Maybe this is just a realization to me. I didn't realize that Unitarianism apparently is really American. I lived in Europe for a little while, and I saw a few Unitarian places, but not many. Is that correct?
Pretty much. The Unitarianism and Universalism that we have is in very American. It has really no direct roots into Europe except through the Puritans, who were to the very, 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 very far left of the Protestant Reformation. And so there is Unitarianism in Europe, and we do have people who we have relationships with in other parts of the world who call themselves Unitarians, but our particular expression of Unitarianism is very, very American. And it's foundational to our country. I mean, a few of our first presidents were Unitarian. Like, we really were the people who created the United States in many, many ways. So it is incredibly American.
Tracy, thank you very much. This is over here. That was real. Wow, I had no. Thank you, first of all, for articulating, you know, the Christmas spirit as I appreciate it. But I had no idea that Unitarians were responsible for so much of that. I didn't know I was as Unitarian as I am. but I also wanted your account of the history of how the spirit of Christmas has changed. Made me think of something that I just recently read about the Lewis and Clark expedition. The Lewis and Clark party were on the rivers for two Christmases, and the first one was celebrated. The men woke up the captains by firing their guns at dawn, and the captains responded by giving them whiskey immediately. I think Clark gave them all a glass, and an hour later, Lewis did the same, not to be outdone. And the day was kind of like that. And that was pretty much it. That was Christmas. And a year later, they were on the Oregon coast, and the whiskey was long gone. And they were hypothermic and living on boiled elk, and they couldn't smoke any meat. It was completely bleak. And they were out of everything that they normally would have celebrated Christmas with, but they managed to give each other gifts. And by this time, they had been on the rivers for a year and a half. They had gone through the Rockies nearly starving. They had long since lost all their clothes and been making their clothes by making buckskin. And Lewis gave Clark socks and underwear, which he had apparently been hoarding since St. Louis. And I just thought, man, never has a human being been more touched and grateful to have socks and underwear. And I just thought that's the spirit of Christmas.
No kidding. So we could just tell, like, if you give your children who think socks and underwear are the worst gifts that you could possibly get, we could just attach that story so they could get it.
I was just going to say, every year I got socks and underwear from my mom. I got other things, too, but now I understand why.
I was always confused by Christmas. I thought that Santa was part of the problem, that he was somehow some gateway into getting kids to believe all this loaves and fishes nonsense. And I really, the whole thing about the reindeer, it just upset me. And I was like, what a bunch of hooey. And your speech really gave me something to think about, and I really think that the part of me that loves the Unitarian stories about, you know, Alexander Graham Bell and Clara Barton and even things like the Statue of Liberty that are historical, that are real, that are grounded in history, and Santa is not. I have to really look at it in a new way and say, you know, do the principles come through?
I think they can. So there's when I was doing a lot of this research, there's this book, which I read another Unitarian Universalist minister sermon on Santa, and she quoted this book about Santa the wild man. And so there's this wild man history, like, across cultures, and this idea that Santa is our version of this wild man. So you might enjoy that. It seems really interesting to me. I knew nothing about it. But
thank you, Tracy.